From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Governor DeSantis rolls out a state budget that's smaller than this year's.
And that's going to help us realign resources to focus on efficiency.
Also this week, Florida's House Speaker looks ahead to the upcoming lawmaking session.
The accountability we placed on our public schools have made our public schools stronger.
We'll also check out a not-so-great report card concerning Florida's institutions of higher learning and discover why a firefighter's contract dispute in the capital city is sounding alarms all over the state. I'm Tom Flanagan. Online and on air, this is Capitol Report and the end-of-week wrap-up from Tallahassee. For the first time in his governorship, Ron DeSantis is proposing a funding decrease. His spending proposal for the next fiscal year is nearly $4 billion less than current levels. It comes as state economists say Florida is still on track to end up with a budget surplus.
At the top of the governor's chopping block, some 1,000 state jobs.
We're reducing the size of government, we're cutting taxes, we're eliminating more of our state debt, yet we also have record investment for education, record support for transportation and infrastructure, record support for environmental restoration and water quality. That is how you govern well.
Florida already has one of the smallest state workforces in the country per capita. The potential job losses, if lawmakers approve them, would follow pay increases for state workers that were awarded this year.
And that's going to help us realign resources to focus on efficiency.
Still, not everything would get a trim. The governor wants to see more money for education, infrastructure, and water quality improvement projects. He's planning more money for teacher raises and more dollars for the state school choice program. There's also a record amount in per-student funding, too.
We don't want it spent on bureaucracy or red tape. We want it to go to teachers. And so that's a $200 million increase over the current year budget.
And then come the annual tax breaks, more than $1 billion worth of them on everything from back-to-school shopping to new arrivals, like a tax break on some homeowners' insurance policies.
$431 million to reduce the cost of homeowners' insurance. And so that'll go up to housing values of $750,000. Six sales tax holidays, which will save taxpayers more than $475 million, including two back-to-school sales tax holidays, disaster preparedness tax holiday, the three-month Freedom Summer tax holiday, which we started a couple years ago, and that is outdoor recreation items, events, tickets, all kinds of stuff so that Florida families can enjoy the summer.
Reactions to the governor's spending plan have broken down on familiar party and position lines. The state's government agencies, which answered to the governor, expressed praise for the spending plan, while the state's largest teachers union, often a target of Republican ire, dismissed the governor's plan. Florida lawmakers will return to Tallahassee in January for their annual lawmaking session. While they'll be taking up various policy proposals, they have only one main constitutional duty: to pass a balanced state budget. I'm Len Hatter.
Florida House Speaker Paul Renner gave a preview of the upcoming legislative session to members of the Capitol Tiger Bay Club in Tallahassee this week. This will be the final year as Speaker for the Palm Coast Republican. Renner sees one of his main priorities in the upcoming session as protecting kids from corruption and even predation by their unrestricted access to social media.
We got to think about kids. We tell kids they can't drink until they're 18, they can't smoke until they're 18, they can't get tattoos or earrings unless they have their parents' consent, all these things. But an 8-year-old kid can get online and see pornography with an adult and an 8-year-old kid. How does that make any sense? How do we let that happen?
Although the speaker didn't give details on how legislative restrictions on internet access might happen, he expected the state's relentless population growth to be a driving force in many of the issues facing lawmakers.
We have more inflow from individuals and business just using tax returns from other states into Florida than the next nine states combined. I think the figure was like $39 billion. And so we have to be ahead of the curve with respect to infrastructure and also understand that that's not going to last forever.
Meaning a national or even worldwide recession would greatly impact Florida's population and tax revenue growth in the future. School choice will continue to be a legislative priority, Renner said, calling the initiative an actual win for traditional public schools.
The accountability we placed on our public schools have made our public schools stronger. So going from Governor Jeb Bush to today, our schools have gone from the bottom among the states to the top.
Florida's enrollment in the Medicaid program dropped by nearly 700,000 this year after the feds declared an end to the COVID health emergency. But Speaker Renner still sees the state upping its game in at least one healthcare area.
One of those areas I think we have to prioritize is mental health. And I think there's some exciting things that we're discussing now that will begin to materially address that issue, which needs to continue in the years to come. It's not something we're going to, wave the magic wand and say we fixed, everyone with mental health issues, but it's something that we need to get after.
Then there's the matter of the energy needed to power a growing state. Renner said when it comes to producing that energy, he's an all-of-the-above kind of guy.
And I recognize on the Democrat side the desire to get to clean energy. And again, if I had a magic wand, I would wave it today and say all energy is clean energy. But realistically, we have to be realistic. How fast can we get there? And what is the cost to real human beings to do so on an accelerated timeline?
And in response to some pretty intense questioning by a Tiger Bay Club member about climate change, Renner said he's just not a believer. Sort of.
I don't believe this idea that, and one of the saddest delegation meetings I had was a 14-year-old girl coming up and saying, I'm not going to have children because the world's coming to an end. I believe that's a scurrilous lie. I do. However, do I believe that the climate is changing? Absolutely.
However, when it comes to anything happening during the upcoming session, House Speaker Paul Renner said he was concerned about one potential obstruction, not opposition from the minority Democrats, but fights within his own party.
It's always been strange to me how you can have a Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican governor, and everybody descends into infighting and egos and all that kind of thing. And so your agenda that starts out like this, which, by the way, is hopefully to deliver good results for the people of Florida, becomes smaller and smaller because of personalities.
All of those personalities will be in Tallahassee when the 2024 session kicks off January 9th. Coming up on Capitol Report, the pressure is building for the wife of Florida's Republican Party chair to step down from her school board job.
The distraction that she brings to the school board.
Academic freedom is becoming a flashpoint on Florida's public campuses.
They want to create an atmosphere of fear that results in self-censorship and will chill free speech.
It seems a contract dispute between Tallahassee firefighters and the city that employs them could have impacts far beyond the capital city limits.
Politicians love firefighters. Come parade day. When it comes contract time, not so much.
And the spat between Florida State University's football program and the college football playoff establishment is bringing some high-powered support from all over the place.
And they were wronged by not being able to participate in the football playoff.
Sarasota School Board member Bridget Ziegler is facing calls to resign. As WUSF's Kerry Sheridan reports, two board members say the media spotlight on her has become a distraction.
A conservative proponent of so-called parental rights in education, known by critics as the Don't Say Gay Law, Ziegler has admitted she engaged in three-way sex with her husband and another woman. Board member Tom Edwards, the only moderate on the board, says she must step down.
I wanted to be very clear. I'm not judging what people do in the privacy of their own homes, but the distraction that she brings to the school board prior to this and now this is not sustainable. It has to go away.
The woman she was sexually involved with has accused Bridget's husband, Christian Ziegler, of sexual assault. Police are still investigating. Chair Karen Rose, a one-time ally of Ziegler's, also says it's time for her to go. Rose says she'll call for a vote at Tuesday's school board meeting. I'm Carrie Sheridan in Sarasota.
A scathing new report on the state of higher education in Florida lays out the extent of what it says is political interference and threats to academic freedom on public campuses. Steve Biscay reports from the state capitol.
The report by the American Association of University Professors describes a sense of dread across the higher ed landscape among faculty, staff, and students. Irene Mulvey is a mathematics professor at Fairfield University in Connecticut and president of AAUP. The organization presented its findings at the state capitol.
We're here because what has happened in Florida's colleges and universities over the last couple of years is a tragedy for Florida's students and their families.
The report relies heavily on news accounts such as the takeover of New College at Sarasota, heightened secrecy in presidential searches, the politicizing of appointments to presidential search and trustee boards, restrictions on teaching race and sexual orientation, and threats to teacher tenure and to labor unions. A recurring theme in the report is tighter control of thought on campus, as dictated by the governor and legislature. Matthew Latta is a music professor at Florida State University and a union leader.
So they're feeling the same fear that we are, and that was exactly the goal of the folks who put this legislation forward. They want to create an atmosphere of fear that results in self-censorship and will chill free speech, and their tactics are working. Faculty are starting to vote with their feet.
Latta said frustrated faculty are fleeing Florida universities in record numbers. A sign of the self-censorship, professors say, is that many did not want their names mentioned in AAU's report for fear of retribution. Senate President Kathleen Passidomo, a supporter of most recent higher ed changes, rejects the idea that academic freedom is under attack.
I don't look at it as an attack. I think it has gone the other way for so many years that perception of an attack is incorrect. I think our institutions should be institutions of learning. They should not be institutions of indoctrination.
AAUP's report can be found online at aaup.org. I'm Steve Bosquet.
The statewide union for firefighters is watching closely as contract talks in Tallahassee pass their 18th negotiating session. They say what happens in one city can have repercussions for others, and the firefighters in Tallahassee have declared an impasse. Margie Menzel reports.
I come from local government. I negotiated behind closed doors. I know what negotiations go. Politicians love firefighters. Come parade day. When it comes contract time, not so much.
That's State Representative Joe Casello, a Boynton Beach Democrat. He was a firefighter for 33 years and last year co-sponsored a firefighter's Bill of Rights. He says the job has grown more dangerous since he started.
I think more and more studies that come out and actually explain the dangers of what the job are now with heart issues, cancer, the short-lived retirements that they have, and all the side effects.
Casello has been watching contract negotiations in Tallahassee, where the local firefighters union has declared an impasse in its talks with the city. The two sides have held 18 negotiating sessions without yielding a contract, which Casello says is bad for morale.
Why would I want to have to fight for my paycheck, okay, fair and equitable pay for what I do in saving lives? And why would I want to join an organization like that, where they kind of take you for granted sometimes?
Tallahassee Fire Department Deputy Chief Richard Jones agrees that recruitment and retention are challenging. He said in an email that, quote, fire departments across the country are seeing a decline in the number of applicants for vacant positions. But the Tallahassee Fire Department is coming up with creative and innovative ways to ensure we continue to recruit a diverse and talented workforce. We are fully staffed and have 8 new recruits starting with our department in January 2024. Unquote. Mike Bellamy, a 24-year veteran of the Tallahassee Fire Department, is also the district representative to the Florida Professional Firefighters, the statewide union. He's concerned that in Tallahassee, mandatory overtime is more frequently imposed than he's ever seen it, meaning firefighters often learn at the end of their shifts that they have to work another one.
The family already makes the sacrifice of, you know, having their loved ones, you know, go away, put themselves in harm's way and do it for long periods of time and, you know, miss multiple days of sending their kids off to school and taking their kids to baseball practice and being there for their first, you know, ballet recital.
That often means they're looking for jobs with fewer hours and less mandatory overtime. For instance, Bellamy says the city of Gainesville has a 42-hour work week, while Tallahassee firefighters work 53 hours. He also says firefighters are more sophisticated now about weighing their work options, and the internet gives them more information than 24 years ago when he started.
Yeah, firefighters are looking for, you know, a safe place to work. The work week has a tremendous impact on your health and wellness, and that's something that 24 years ago we weren't talking about. And so they're looking at places that, you know, aren't working, you know, 53 hours plus a week. And in our case, with mandatory overtime, you know, well over 60 and 70 hours some weeks.
However, Bellamy says there are higher numbers of firefighters coming out of training. And TFD Deputy Chief Richard Jones writes that, quote, "We have a talented and diverse workforce that is highly engaged and shows up each and every day to provide excellent service with passion and commitment. The men and women of the Tallahassee Fire Department serve this community with an allegiance and devotion to the mission of the organization," unquote. The next step in the snarled negotiations between the city and its firefighters union will be to bring in an arbitrator. I'm Margie Menzel.
Florida Humanities, a nonprofit in St. Petersburg, has a new book out to commemorate its golden anniversary. Once Upon a Time in Florida is a collection of essays from its magazine called Forum. WUSF's Matthew Petty speaks with Jackie Levine, the editor of Once Upon a Time in Florida, to talk about what went into the creation of this book. But first, he asks Nasheed Madyuan, executive director of Florida Humanities, how much he learned about Florida while creating the anthology.
I have a question for both of you. How much did you learn about Florida in the course of putting this anthology together, Nasheed?
Oh, goodness. Putting the anthology together, I guess for me, was a result of going back through the archives, similar to the benefit that Jackie had going through the archives of Forum magazine, and realizing, oh, the first Thanksgiving did not happen with the Puritans and the Pilgrims. It happened right here 56 years earlier in St. Augustine. The ability to look at parallel lines between an African-American writer and a minister's daughter, and they come to the same place, different sides of the track, and have these wonderful experiences that are completely void of the fact that they're in the same place. You know, I learned that Florida is highly likely one of the richest states, and I'm very proud of where I'm from, the Arkansas, Mississippi Delta, and all the music and the roots here, but I've fallen in love with Florida going through this project.
Jackie.
Yeah, I love that you brought up the surprising aspect, because going through it and going through the archives and actually in the whole process of editing Forum, it's just full of surprises and full of connections. And so you see when you're talking about that the band came down here for fishing and ended up bringing a team down for spring training, that's the story of Florida in a sense, because people would come here for one purpose, like, for example, in World War II, there was a lot of training going on of soldiers, and many of them ended up coming back after the war and settling in Florida. Actually, the same thing happened during the Civil War.
that soldiers came to Florida and they said, hey, I like this. It's warm, it's beautiful, it's, et cetera. And they would come back and you would just see all these connections that happened. One of my favorite stories, this is a bit of a digression, but is about how Mary McLeod Bethune really saved the fortunes of Daytona Beach during World War II. Here she was, somebody who at that time couldn't sit at a lunch counter in town. She could not integrate a lunch counter. But when the city fathers realized the town was suffering because of the lack of tourism during World War II, they turned to Mary McLeod Bethune and said, hey, do you think you could do something for us? Do you think you could call the White House and see if we could get a Women's Army Auxiliary Corps training center here? And she got on the phone with President Roosevelt, and the next thing you know, there was the Women's Army Auxiliary training in Daytona Beach, which really saved the fortunes. So I think these are the little surprising things that putting together the anthology as well as working on forum were things I found out. And speaking of fishing and sports, we have a story by Stephen Knoll that looks at how sports shape Florida. And one of the interesting things that I found out through that story, and that was, I think, one of the first stories I actually assigned when I became editor of Forum, was that Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, not first in Brooklyn, but in Daytona Beach, mm-hmm. when he was on a farm team for the Brooklyn Dodgers. So there's just a lot about Florida that I think we as Floridians don't really know, because oftentimes I think we're seeing the superficial and we're not really delving into what's beneath the surface.
That was Jackie Levine, editor of Once Upon a Time in Florida, and we thank WUSF's Matthew Petty for that report. Well, a little more than a year after calling on the National Guard to help out the State Department of Corrections, Governor Ron DeSantis' administration is proposing to assign another 100 Guard members to Florida prisons and buy dozens of now leased trailers to house them and family members. The Corrections Agency for years has grappled with staffing shortages and high turnover rates, resulting in millions of dollars in overtime pay for workers. The legislature has authorized hiring and retention bonuses for correctional officers and hiked starting salaries, but staffing issues continue. The Department of Corrections recently submitted a request to a legislative committee looking for $23.5 million to offset salaries for 100 additional guard members at state prisons through June 30th, the end of the fiscal year. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is backing Florida State University's potential legal battle against the college football playoffs. The governor joins a host of state officials who are recommending FSU sue the selection committee for leaving the undefeated Power Five conference champion out of the football playoffs. But is the talk of a lawsuit just hot air? Adrian Andrews spoke with a collegiate sports attorney to find out if the team actually has a case.
Shortly after FSU secured the ACC conference title, there were cheers. That joyfulness was short-lived, as less than 24 hours later, the Seminoles learned that despite staying undefeated and winning the conference title with their third-string quarterback, they would not get to play for a national title. You could hear the deep sighs from the team as they found out during an ESPN live stream.
Devastated, and I'm sure there is a lot of anger in Tallahassee as a result of this.
The blowback against the College Football Playoff Selection Committee's decision was swift and has so far been unrelenting, with Governor DeSantis among the latest people to pitch the idea of a lawsuit and going so far as to promise $1 million to be set aside for FSU should it decide to take legal action against the CFP.
We're setting aside $1 million for any litigation expenses that may become as a result of this really, really poor decision by the college football playoffs to exclude an undefeated team who won a big Power Five conference championship.
Do they have a case? The answer to that would be potentially.
Jason Sechin is a practicing sports attorney in Miami with over 25 years of experience in litigation. He represents athletes from almost every level, including high school and collegiate players. It's a given that people lose every day and that nothing is really guaranteed, no matter how hard someone works for it. So why are so many people so mad about the CFP's move to the point where they're considering suing over it? Sechin points to a possible answer.
And I say that because most lawsuits have to deal with money and monetary losses.
The University of Michigan, Washington, Texas, and Alabama will begin playing in major televised semifinal games for the college football national title later this month. As for Florida State, it will face a one-loss Georgia team in a lower-caliber bowl game later. Sechin says that game might be a key piece in building a solid case.
I don't know exactly what the numbers will look like when everything shakes out, but if Florida State plays in the Orange Bowl and makes a certain sum of money for their involvement in that, and they would have received more money had they played in the college football playoff, and they were wronged by not being able to participate in the football playoff, then they would have a monetary loss that they could seek legal remedy for, potentially.
Over the last week, Florida State has gained legal support from other government officials, like State Republican Senator Corey Simon, who played football at Florida State and retired from the pros. He's partnering up with U.S. Senator and former Governor Rick Scott in the fight. Scott sent the playoff committee chairman Boo Corrigan a 3-page letter expressing his disappointment with the group and its decision to keep FSU out of the playoffs. In the letter, Scott wrote that he demands, quote, total transparency from the committee and wants each member to hand over any text, email, or notes used as deciding factors against Florida State. The outrage stems from comments made by Corrigan on ESPN the day after the team won its 16th Atlantic Coast Conference title without their starting quarterback.
As you look at who they are as a team right now, without Jordan Travis, without the offensive dynamic that he brings to it, they are a different team. And the committee voted Alabama 4 and Florida State 5.
Jordan Travis, FSU star QB, suffered a severe leg injury during the last home game of the season. Travis's injury called for reconstructive surgery as he was forced to sit out for the remainder of the season. But head football coach Mike Norvell and the Noles were still able to pick up wins even without their star player.
Yeah!
FSU went on to win two more games on the road against the University of Florida and its most recent win against 16th-ranked Louisville to secure the ACC championship. While fans believe their team's performance would surely get them into the playoffs, the selection committee did not. FSU fell to the fifth spot on the four-team playoff bracket. While FSU has not publicly stated if it will seek legal action, it did voluntarily agree to take part in the current playoff scheme when it agreed to join the NCAA and the ACC. Also, according to Sechin, Florida State would more than likely spend more than $1 million in hiring enough lawyers to compose the massive amount of evidence needed to prove that members on the selection committee did in fact break CFP's rules and guidelines when it comes to who can be in the playoffs. The current four-team system has been in place since 2014, the year the college football playoffs were first introduced. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Margie Menzel. Thanks also to Steve Bosquet, Kerry Sheridan, and Matthew Petty. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us again next week, online and on air, for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.